think it, they say it. This is Ruskin and Zach.
26 minutes till the hour here on Ruskin and Zach. Wes Rucker joins us now on the Williams Tractor Hotline from Vols 247. Zach, over here, he told you earlier, for those of you listening, that he's got Tennessee kind of being the linchpin of everything.
Yep, everything hinges on Tennessee.
The SEC, so we'll talk to Wes about it. How you doing, Wes?
Doing great. How y'all today?
Great. We're doing good. So give us kind of a snapshot of Vol training camp, some of the big stories or interesting stuff happened in the first couple weeks there in Knoxville.
Well, I mean, so far they've been all, for the most part, present and accounted for. You know, that's you want to say that's a given, but it's really not in this era. So, I mean, they've had they had one practice cut back because of some COVID situation that they had going on, but they were able to trace that back and they got comfortable with everything again. So they're back at it again. So everything seems okay now. They're keeping us a million miles away from it right now, as you can imagine. But from everything I've heard, everything's going pretty well.
Last year, Tennessee got a lot of run as the team that was ready to jump into that top two with Florida and Georgia, and they just stumbled out of the gate and recovered towards the back half of the season. This year, that team that everybody expects to make the big quantum leap is Florida, which I think they're going to fall flat on their face. Is Tennessee ready to jump into that top three, maybe get one of the two big games, Florida or Georgia?
I'll tell you, that's really, you know, you could say this about any team, but I think it's especially true in Tennessee's case. If Tennessee gets good quarterback play, Tennessee's going to be a good football team. The other pieces are there. You know, they're obviously replacing Juwan Jennings and Marquez Callaway in the, I guess you could say, in the passing game, their receiver. Those guys are not going to be easy to replace, especially a star like Jennings. But I think they feel pretty comfortable with what they've got there. The whole thing comes down to really two questions. One, can they get pretty good quarterback play? And two, can they rush the passer without blitzing? They can do those two things. The pieces are there. It's just a matter of which will it be Jarrett Garantano, and if it is, which Jarrett Garantano will show up. Because if the good one shows up, Tennessee's pretty salty. If it's the bad one, then it's not so good.
Yeah, and you know that's watching some stuff, and that was one of the conversations I think on SEC Network this weekend about Garantano and just kind of which. You know, is this finally the moment where he has that solid year, or is, as you said, is it more up and down again?
Well, I mean, I'll say this for him. This is he's kind of been jerked around a little bit with some of the coaching changes that they've had there and some of the coordinator changes they've had. You know, this is really the first time in his career that he's had a coordinator for like a back-to-back season at Tennessee. So, I mean, you've got the same head coach. You've got the same offensive coordinator, the same system. And we all know Jim Chaney's record with quarterbacks is it goes back a couple decades. It's as good as just about anyone's except for maybe David Cutcliffe. It's a really good history with quarterbacks that he's got. And this will be the second season that he's been under him and you know, Chris Winkie at quarterbacks coach. The pieces, the fundamental aspect of it should be there by now. And I think you saw last season at times toward the end, he started to kind of grasp the system better. He felt more comfortable. He was making fewer mistakes. But, you know, there's also that odd moment. Like, people forget that game last year at Alabama. If he just hands that ball off, Tennessee is within, I think, 6 or 7 points right there in the fourth quarter down there in Tuscaloosa. Now, between me and you and everybody listening, I think Bama wins that game anyway. But if he just does a simple thing there, Tennessee's really got the momentum and is really going to kind of push the tide there. So that's the kind of thing he's got to get out of his system. If he can take that cataclysmic part out of it, he's always had the tools. Everybody's known that. I mean, he was, you know, the nation's top-ranked quarterback prospect coming in. So he's got the ability. It's just will it come together.
Is Jeremy Pruitt finally settled in as head coach? I know the first year was kind of rough. Last year there were expectations, and they clearly weren't ready to make that jump yet. But recruiting is off the charts. He seems to have just sort of settled in with his coaching staff. It seems like this thing has sort of turned the corner, and they're ready to make that jump.
I think so. You know, the thing about Jeremy Pruitt was this. I said at the beginning of that coaching search, if I would have preferred at that point Tennessee gone and gotten someone who had head coaching experience. With that said, if they didn't go get someone that had any head coaching experience, Pruitt would have been the guy on my list because he's a guy who he's the son of a high school head football coach for a long time, so he's been around the game his entire life. He's worked for Nick Saban, Jimbo Fisher, Mark Richt. He's worked for a lot of the better head coaches in the business. And he's a guy who was prepared as you could be for that moment, but he never sat in that seat. And I don't care what you say about anything that you see from the outside, until you're in that seat and you understand the problems that come across your desk every single day, you really can't understand what it's like to be a head coach, especially at a place like Tennessee with all the demands and pushing and pulling. It's going to be a tough gig. And I think he had to adjust to it. And I think he had to get more people around him that he felt comfortable with. He's been able to hire some really good staffers. Philip Fulmer's given him the resources to do that. I think he kind of feels like he's kind of getting in a rhythm now, and we'll see. I think that in the old days, if you could have given a guy several years, I think this guy has all the makings of a guy who could do some really big things. But we kind of live in a microwave society now, so you got to get to it pretty quick or you don't get a chance. So these next couple years coming up for him are obviously huge.
We're talking with Wes Rucker from 247 Sports covering Tennessee with us here on Ruskin and Zach. How did the Tennessee coaches and everybody, and the fan base even, how'd they feel about the 2020 schedule that dropped? By right in the middle, you get Florida, the rivalry game on December 5th. This is kind of, what was the reaction to that?
It was mixed, to be honest with you. And when you looked at Tennessee's, the potential schedule scenarios that Tennessee could have had in terms of getting those two games played, Tennessee got the second most difficult combination possible. So in terms of the actual opponents added, I think Tennessee kind of took the business in there. Not like Arkansas did, not like Missouri did, but Tennessee got added. Auburn and A&M got put on the schedule. That's not easy. Especially they just went to Auburn 2 years ago, so that was a really interesting selection there. But, I think Jeremy Pruitt, going back to his time in Alabama, going back to, a couple of years ago, he's always done well against those Gus Malzahn offenses. He's got something figured out there. So that's not too terrible. And then A&M, they're kind of an ultimate wild card anyway. They're almost kind of the Tennessee of the West. You think they could be pretty good. You think they could be potentially pretty darn good, but you don't really know yet. So there's a lot of familiarity there between those coaches too. So I think this is something that it was not a great addition to Tennessee's schedule. It could have been a lot easier. But when you look at the way it was laid out, Florida at the back end, making them come up to Neyland and wear some parkas in December, that Tennessee loves that. Tennessee's wanted that for years. Tennessee has always wanted the Florida game to be at the tail end of the season. And the only time it was played there, of course, that was 2001 after 9/11. Tennessee won that game and won the East. So they want that game there. So that's a big deal for them. But it's a difficult schedule. Certainly nobody in the East has to play Bama every year but Tennessee. So, you try to map out every year who could win the conference or division titles. Nobody in the East got to play Bama every year. So that's always going to be an issue for Tennessee as long as Saban's there.
Ruskin has a theory on Tennessee, and I just want to kind of get your take on it. That when Clemson, the North Carolina schools, Virginia Tech are really good, it's Tennessee that kind of suffers because of the recruiting triangle that they're in. When Tennessee's good, usually Clemson isn't as good as they are. North Carolina struggles, Virginia. It's sort of this big cyclical thing where Tennessee doesn't have a natural recruiting base. They go into South Carolina to go get athletes. But if Clemson's doing really well, all those top athletes are going to Clemson.
Well, there's no question. And the fact that Tennessee right now has such a great recruiting class, despite the fact that Mack Brown and those guys are doing an unbelievable job at North Carolina recruiting, that's a bit surprising. And maybe you look at it, okay, well, Tech's down, so they can go up there and get some guys. But, Tennessee, you could do an entire episode. You could do an entire episode. I say episode like it's a podcast. You could do an entire show on Tennessee's recruiting kind of area, because Tennessee has always recruited everywhere. They'll go to Hawaii. They'll go to freaking Europe. They don't care. They will go anywhere to get somebody. But what's interesting is that Nashville is the fastest growing major city in the country, and it's producing a lot more prospects every year. And going forward, that should be a plus for Tennessee. A lot of them will be transplant kids, so they might not have all of them, might not have that, intrinsic kind of pull a couple hours, across the mountains to Knoxville. But that's certainly a big deal for Tennessee. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, Tennessee's got to leave the state, got to go to Atlanta, got to go to the Carolinas, got to go to Virginia. Tennessee's geographical location, you can get two-thirds of the country's population within, 8 or 10 hours drive. So you can get anybody. You just got to get them.
It's interesting because Arkansas doesn't have a great quote-unquote local recruiting base either, having to go out of state a lot of times, Oklahoma, Texas, to get players. And yet – Tennessee has done it, you know, more recently, 20, 25 years ago, or even less than that, than Arkansas. Arkansas's great teams over the last 20 years have been helped out by great waves of prospects from in our state, Wes. It's not been, they haven't been just crushing it with recruiting in Texas or Oklahoma lately.
Well, if it's interesting, you know, and it's true that Clemson in particular, Clemson is getting a whole bunch of kids that 20 years ago, 15 years ago, Tennessee was getting, right. Period. That's just a fact. But what's interesting is even with Clemson, you look back at last year, both those stud receivers, Knoxville born and bred, with Rodgers and with Higgins. Those are both Knoxville kids. And Trevor Lawrence, he grew up as big a Tennessee fan as you'll see. His family's all from East Tennessee. He grew up wanting to go to Tennessee. They just kind of botched that recruitment a little bit, Butch Jones and those guys did. So there's, you know, they had, like, watching Clemson for the past few years for Tennessee has been miserable, because not only were those two local studs at wide receiver making all these big plays, you had Trevor Lawrence, another East Tennessee kid, basically, you know, chucking the pill to him, and he's a generational talent at quarterback. You know, and plus, you know, there was something with ATN. They had a chance, you know, didn't really get in there. That team basically has been the bane of Tennessee's existence to a certain extent, because they used to get those guys.
What's the seating situation at Neyland? I mean, you're talking 110,000 seat stadium. What's the how many are they going to let in there?
They haven't given an exact number yet, but I think it's around 25K, is my understanding.
Students, so, band.
The band obviously will not be on the field, working on getting exactly what they're, I think they're going to be in there, but, you know, certainly not like a traditional, like they would be kind of packed in. Basically, if you take a seat, you know, a place like Neyland, and you mark off like every 6 feet as a place you can't use, you know, you're basically looking at 25K or so. And that's including, you know, media, only one person per outlet, which we usually send four guys home and away everywhere they play pretty much every sport. So that'll be different for us. It'll be different for a lot of people. But in the stadium, I'd say, yeah, you're looking at no firm numbers, but you're looking at about 25K.
What's the number, you know, like 56, 57, when Rocky Tops played for the 91st time? Are you just like, man, all right, enough, enough?
You know what's interesting is that, you know, if when you look at like some of the top fight songs in college sports, I mean, I'd put it up there with Alabama's and Michigan's and Notre Dame's. It's kind of one of those ones that just everybody knows the second you hear it. And I think my favorite Rocky Top quote ever was from Lou Holtz, when he said that he hated that song so much because it was like the only time he could ever get his tail kicked and still walk off the field kind of whistling and happy because he liked the tune. You know, I mean, he was like, you know, you're sitting there getting beat by 30 points and you're going, oh, this is funny. Look, moonshine stills and this is fine. You know, I mean, it's kind of like it almost becomes like a white noise to you when you've heard it enough. Like, people think, like, it reaches a point where you hear it so much that it's annoying, but then you kind of get to like an acceptance phase and you're like, it's just going to be there. So you hear it everywhere. You hear it all the time. You know, I mean, it's like every time someone has their third beer in a bar, all right, play Rocky Top. You kind of get used to it. You know what I mean? You just get used to it. And thankfully, it has a good tune, or else, my God, it'd be miserable.
It is kind of a catchy song.
It is.
You're right about that. I think in terms of irritate, like, there's nothing catchy about the thing USC plays
over and over again. They know two songs.
Yeah,
and I mean, there's nothing about
Sooner. Yeah, or Boomer Sooner. Yeah, a couple of Oklahoma games. Yeah. Boomer Sooner, it's like you couldn't add a third word in there. Really,
That's all there is.
Hey, the last time we talked, I had just been attacked by a pack of corgis. Have you put a muzzle on that thing?
I need to, man. He's getting a little too big for his britches. You know, if you ever seen a dog that size and you wonder how they've been herding sheep and cattle for 600 years, you just got to watch them in action. They don't get scared of things.
No, they do not.
It's kind of amazing. They're amazing little creatures.
Wes Rucker, 247 Sports, covering Tennessee. Thanks, Wes, for the time today. We appreciate it.
No problem. Anytime, y'all.
All right. Wes and all our guests join us here on the Williams Tractor Hotline on Ruskin and Zach.
It's time to get ugly.
You're listening to Ruskin and Zach.
Did you get into like some yellow dust or something?
Told you.
Hey, raise your hand if they play this at your prom. Hey, it was new.
Yeah, this was a fresh one then back then.
You want to know a fun fact about this song?
What?
My German class, one of my papers, I translated this whole thing into German.
Oh, Bust a Move?
Yes.
Young MC?
Yeah, it was great. It was very helpful when I got to Germany.
I'm sure it was. You could say, she's dressed in yellow, she said hello, come sit next to me, you fine fellow, in German.
That's second to lose, and one comes next to you, bust him.
Very useful to know in a foreign country. All right, Andrew Hutchinson is with us now, hogbeat.com, part of Rivals. And Hutch, I'm not saying this to patronize you, I really mean it. I think you are the most keen observer we have at Razorback football. No spin, no opinions, just this is what I saw today at practice.
Well, that's my goal, guys. I just try to relay what I see, and then I don't want to be considered a homer, and I don't want to be considered overly negative. I just want to shoot you straight. That's what I try to do.
How pissed are you that Nikki's taking the entire week off with this alleged wisdom teeth thing?
Well, having had my wisdom teeth out as well, I honestly don't blame her. She was trying to come back on, I guess it was last night. She was trying to tune into the Zoom teleconference with the coordinators, and she texted me afterward and was like, "Yeah, I took some nausea medicine and it didn't work." So she's pushed herself a little too much. I told her, I said, "Man, it knocked me out for a week when I got mine out. So take your time."
I had my wisdom teeth out when I was y'all's age, and I was up the next morning, washed my car, and had Chinese food that night.
Oh God!
There are people like that.
That would be me.
I know people that were able to return to normal the very next day, but I mean, I don't know. I was out for about a week before I could really do much.
It's sort of a generational thing. Y'all need to toughen up. I think that's what it is.
So before the texters yell at us, let's get back to Razorback football here for a moment, Hutch. And you've been out there. You have observed. What are some of your takeaways a few weeks into this thing now?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to really get too terribly much from these type of things because we're only out there for 15 minutes and they don't really let us see any of the good stuff. We don't get to see any of the scrimmage. We don't get to see the wide receivers or DBs going one-on-one. We don't get to see, you know, inside drill with the offensive and defensive lines going into each other. Really, we just get to see the individual drills. And having watched, I think I've watched the defense a little bit more than the offense, just the way it worked out. And I think that my biggest takeaway just from those times is that there seems to be a lot more emphasis on teaching. I know that sounds ridiculous to say because, you know, it's practice and you think they have that all the time, but I just remember last year with the practices, there was, you know, the music was blaring, you know, super, super loud. I don't want to sound like, you know, a cranky old guy about, you know, not having music or whatever, but it's hard to really teach, you know, things and correct things when you see something wrong when that's going on. And I've just really noticed the defensive position coaches, you know, they're not afraid to, after, if a couple of guys go through, rep through a drill, they're not afraid to stop it and say, no, you need to do this or that differently and fix it. And so it just seems like there's more coaching. I actually noticed that. And then I think the next day, Dorian Gerald was on a Zoom with us for an interview, and he said that he's gotten more coaching in like a week and a half, 2 weeks of camp than he had 2 years before. So I think that's pretty telling.
Barry Odom was on on the Zoom, and he was talking about the defensive line, and it just sounds from what he's talking about that they've actually built some depth in the offensive line. He singled out, you know, Springdale's Isaiah Nichols as a guy that they're going to be relying on in as the third guy in that defensive tackle rotation.
Yeah, you need rotation. You need depth on the defensive line because that's a position you're not going to play 100% of the snaps. You can get away with that maybe in the secondary. But really up front, specifically, you need to have depth there, and you're going to have guys like Isaiah Nichols rotating in there at defensive tackle. You feel pretty good about Xavier Kelly and Jonathan Marshall at tackle. You feel pretty good about Dorian Gerald and Julius Coates, who has apparently just really had a good camp, and I'm excited to see him in live action. But you're going to need guys to rotate there, and I think you do have some good depth. One guy that kind of surprised me to hear this, but then again, it didn't, knowing what I saw last year, is Eric Gregory. You know, he was another one of those four-star defensive ends that signed, but he really didn't get to play near as much as, say, a Mateo Soli Zach Williams, even a Colin Clay, who has since transferred. He actually redshirted, Gregory did. But early on, he was an early enrollee. I saw him last spring, and he was probably the most impressive of those defensive ends. He just got banged up in fall camp, and that kind of set him, got him kind of behind, delayed his progress, and just really never got a chance last year. And apparently he's really emerged and even pushed for some first-team reps so far in camp. So I think that's really encouraging, and I think he's a guy that can maybe surprise some people on the defensive side of the ball.
We're speaking with Andrew Hutchinson from Hogbeat.com here on Ruskin and Zach. So typically, after scrimmage two in training camp, a lot of decisions are made on the depth chart. Is that what you're expecting following tomorrow's scrimmage as well?
I really am. The two positions, I think, primarily are going to get kind of sorted out after this scrimmage are our tight end and linebacker. Those are two positions that just keep coming up in conversations. Since the last scrimmage, that they maybe didn't have as good of a performance as they were expecting. I think most people are thinking Hudson Henry is the starting tight end, and I still feel that way, but it sounds like they're looking for more from a blocking perspective. Mm-hmm. I get the sense that maybe he needs to be a better blocker.
He's not an inline tight end. He's a big wide receiver.
Not. And I think that they're going to need to do some rotating there. Like have him in there whenever it's a passing situation. And, of course, he can block once or twice, you know, to keep the defense honest. But also have Blake Kern, you know, the former walk-on that's, you know, drawn praise for his blocking capabilities, have him in there whenever it's a running down. So I see that still kind of being the case. I think those are the two guys that are going to get the most reps at tight end, but it sounds like it's still up in the air based on what the coaches say.
It feels like they could almost slide a tackle out there and put an 80 on him and let him and use an extra offensive lineman as that inline tight end, because Hudson Henry is just a big wide receiver, a good one, but he's not a real physical guy. He's not a guy that you're going to line up tight and try and double down on a defensive end.
Yeah, he's not the exact same kind of tight end as his older brother. His older brother was a really good blocker, in addition to being a really good receiver. I just feel like he's a little bit different. I think the expectations for him are that he's going to come in and be a Mackey Award winner. I don't think that's really fair, he could be a really good tight end and not live up to those expectations. It's just, you know, it sucks for him, but. I still think he's going to be good. Don't get me wrong, but I don't see him being, you know, arguably the best tight end in school history like his brother was.
Hutch, this is a tricky one, but how's the health? I know it's never been more difficult than ever, given the pandemic, to kind of get an idea of, you know, what the status of players are in terms of health. I know we know a couple guys who've had some just normal, you know, knee kind of stuff going on, but what's your read on the health of this team?
Yeah, it's hard to say because of what you said there. You know, you don't know what is actual injury and what's, you know, being held out because of COVID and contact tracing and things of that nature. But one thing I am encouraged by is that Jalen Catalon, who I think is the first week of camp, had to have a minor knee procedure type thing. Most people believe he's going to be out like 4 weeks or something, but he's been back this week and he's going to be full go for the scrimmage. And that is a key player because I think he's right in the mix to be a starting safety. So he's back and healthy. It sounds like most major players are healthy. You know, they mentioned Josh Oglesby, the running back. He's a little dinged up right now, but he's a guy that was going to be, you know, third on the depth chart at best, I think, you know, behind Rakeem, obviously, and Traylon Smith. But it sounds like they're pretty good at this point, but of course, all it takes is, you know, one guy to take a trip to Dixon or something and to screw the whole thing up.
All the news out of camp is rainbows and sunshine. What are you worried about?
I'm still worried about depth. I think that's the thing about this team is I just don't know if there's enough depth there. I think the offense, there's enough pieces there to be dangerous. I think there's a couple of playmakers on the defensive side of the ball. But what happens if there's an injury or, like what I just said, some sort of COVID outbreak where a couple of key guys have to be quarantined or something? I don't think they have enough depth to sustain something like that. So that's probably my number one concern going into this season, is just having enough bodies, capable SEC bodies.
We're talking with Andrew Hutchinson, Hogbeat.com, part of Rivals here on Ruskin and Zach. Yeah, I haven't, maybe I've missed this. Have they explained, like, how do they ensure that Felipe Franks or frontline guys, like, do they not go in the meetings with everyone else? Like, how does that work to keep them kind of in an additional layer of protection should they come up with a positive test or something?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure how they're going about that. I know, or back in the summer, I think it's Hunter Yurecek had mentioned, you know, they may continue to do meetings via Zoom and things, so that way you're not having like all of your quarterbacks in a small room during film sessions where it could easily spread amongst the whole position group, and then you get to a Saturday with no quarterback.
Right.
I don't know if they're doing that. I don't know if they're, I think I've heard that they're doing some, like, when they do team meetings, they've changed the location so that way they can spread out and do it where it's, you know, you're more than 6 feet apart and stuff. I'm not exactly sure what the logistics that look like, though. I may have to look into that because that's an interesting question.
We were watching a little bit of Felipe Franks film earlier today, and he's a mobile guy. He's 6'6". He's almost 240 pounds. I mean, he can move around a little bit, and he could be effective in the run game, but with as thin as they are at the quarterback position, I don't know that Kendall Browse wants to risk running, you know, zone reads with him, quarterback wraps with him.
No, I don't think so, especially with having the injury history as well. I mean, he got hurt last year. By all accounts, he's 100% healthy and 100% confident, you know, in his ankle. But still, you don't want to risk it. I think if you do want to do something where you run the quarterback, maybe you have a package for KJ Jefferson or even a Malik Hornsby, have them in the game and do something like that. Or maybe you go Wildcat with a Raheem Boyd or a Treylon Burks or something. I don't think you risk it with Felipe Franks because he just, watching him in camp, that's another thing I've noticed, is just he throws such a pretty ball. I mean, I don't know if it's just because of what I've seen the last 2 years, I've thrown a bad quarterback play, but he throws such a tight spiral, I mean, just so consistently, and it's usually very accurate. So you got to keep him healthy because he's definitely QB1.
Who's behind him?
Yeah.
Right now, it sounds like it's KJ Jefferson. I'm not completely sold on that. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, maybe Malik Hornsby comes along and supplants him as the number two guy eventually during the season, because KJ just, I don't know if his arm is 100% there. I don't know if he's as accurate. The ball that he throws isn't as pretty as a Felipe Frank. But right now, it is KJ number two on the depth chart.
All right. Andrew Hutchinson, Hogbeat.com with us here on Ruskin and Zach. So with this Georgia news yesterday, I mean, all the fans are, you know, thinking this is a winnable game now. Are you? I tried to ask it with a straight face.
I think it's a coverable game.
That's what Zach said yesterday.
You know,
got hammered.
As we get closer and closer to the season, I think you're going to see more and more fans being like talking themselves into the 4 or 5 wins or something crazy like that.
Yep, every year.
You're right. It happens every year. You got to really look at it and say, who are they really going to beat? At Georgia, yeah. They may not have Jamie Newman, but they're still going to have JT Daniels. You know, who knows if he's 100% healthy, you know, because he still hasn't been cleared for full contact based on what I read the other day. But still, that is a loaded team with a ton of talent, and just the talent gap is humongous. I think that's going to be a game they don't have a chance to win. Now, the next week against Mississippi State, you know, maybe Ole Miss, Missouri, then maybe you could see, you know, some wins there. But again, I just think that the talent gap between Arkansas and a lot of the SEC is just still too big.
Were you aware that Mike Nabors won a state title in mime?
I was not. I did not know you could win a state title in mime, to be honest.
No, we weren't either.
Yeah, we had no idea until he came on and broke it down for us. And look, I need you to get busy on this because we're trying to get him a wing, the fine arts wing named after him. But we'd also like you to find the video.
Ooh, yeah.
That would be some good quality content.
He always provides.
Would that be better than that video of Gus from college dancing in that, remember that? In the jean shorts? Yeah. You know the video I'm talking about?
The shorts. Yeah, the shorts.
Yeah. He's like got the green screen behind him or some kind of weird background. I don't know what it is.
Brutal.
It's funny though. All right. Andrew Hutchinson, hogbeat.com. Again, thorough observations on practice. No spin. Just what he saw each and every day out there. Thank you, Andrew. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys.
All right, hogbeat.com, H-A-W-G, hogbeat.com here on Ruskin and Zach. All right, it's a...
It's time to get ugly.
You're listening to Ruskin and Zach.
All right, it's 16 after the hour. This is Ruskin and Zach. Joined now by the head coach, women's basketball, University of Arkansas. Zach has described, our Don Rickles here on Ruskin and Zach. Mike Neighbors is with us. Coach, how you doing?
I'm doing good. That's an aptly named guest host spot. I like it.
That's right. Let's get the business out of the way. News today with Kelsey Plum. Joining your staff, this is a big deal in the women's basketball world.
Yeah, we think so. You know, one of our things to always try to surround our kids with the best resources we can, and having somebody who is playing currently in the professional ranks and with USA Basketball and has done it from a student athlete seat is invaluable. You know, I've been watching what Coach Muss has done across the hall over there with their NBA experience, how valuable that's been to them, and I think we can do the same thing for our student athletes over here. And you know, the number one overall draft pick, all-time leading scorer, there's a lot of good things on her resume that point to her being able to be somebody our kids can rely on.
So last night I'm sitting on my couch and I get a text from you and yeah. I'm minding my own business, I'm not bothering anybody, and you tell me you're one of the 5%. You said you're not a trained swimmer yet you are a three-time coach of a state championship swimming team.
I missed the meeting my first year at Bentonville. I was not on the email group and I showed up. I missed the meeting, and as a result I got named the swim coach. The AD told me I was the new swim coach. I had to be there at 4:30, and I had to be there Monday through Friday, and the season started when school's over, started and got out when school was out. Season long, all year long sport. And I said, well, obviously I can't do this. I'm coaching basketball. Basketball practice starts at 4 o'clock. And he went, no, the other 4:30. The other one. And I was like, you mean, so I had to be there at 4:30 a.m. And all I really did was put the lane ropes in, because Walmart had hired a full-time real coach that really knew what he was doing, not somebody that had missed the meeting. So sure enough, for 3 years, I was the swim coach and they were loaded. All I did was drive the bus, get them there on time, and rake in the state championship. So, but I can't swim. I the first swim meet I ever saw, I coached.
I have a question. Like when you win a state title in swimming, the tradition is they throw the coach in the pool.
Absolutely, did it right here. The first year we won it was right here at in the auditorium on campus. Threw me into the diving in. And then they had to swim out there and get me, because I was just standing there treading water, about to drown. They had to come get me.
All right. Now you've got two rings as a tennis coach.
That same year, yeah. My first year, we won the girls swimming, and then we won girls tennis and the overall tennis. Again, because, I mean, we were killing it in the country club sports up there. Our basketball team was 1-24. But that's also a fact. I am not. None of this is made. And anybody from the area that was around in the 90s knows that first year, three rings in girls tennis, girls overall tennis, and girls swimming. Then the boys started winning it too. And some of the best athletes I ever worked with were in that sport. It was crazy.
We're talking with Mike Neighbors here on Ruskin and Zach. So, do you have a pool over there at the mansion now where you live?
There's no mansion, and there's definitely no pool. Okay. It has been converted into a nursery, and the entire house is a playroom. I've got one little nook and cranny in the game room, I would tell you, is devoted to my memorabilia anymore. But no pool. There will probably, if there is ever a pool, it will not be for my use, because it's probably more of a danger to me than it is Bowen.
Okay, so in our conversation last night, you asked me the question. You told me that you'd won a state title in high school, and you gave me three guesses, and I guessed incorrectly on all three.
You did. And I, you know, I'm an active participator in all y'all's polls. I vote daily. I just wanted you to be aware that I do pay attention to it. I vote daily in all of them, whether they pertain. And I was in that 5% of non-swimmers. But it led me to my own trivia contest for you. And it was, you know, I did win a state title as a Greenwood Bulldog. And I wondered if you could guess. And you, I think, first guessed track and field.
Right. Golf and debate.
Could not have been further from the truth. I sucked at track. And then you guessed golf, which maybe now I could have made her team, but back then I was even worse. So that was, then you got really close with your last guess, but you still went 0 for 3, yeah. But state champion in 1985, that's a fact.
Yeah. So in what then?
In what discipline?
Well, you didn't make a poll of it.
No, I didn't.
So it is in mime.
Mime. Like
mime.
Like stuck in the box mime?
But see that, no, you don't do paint, you don't do stuck in the box. That's what a mime does, but you act out a scene without words. And yeah, you don't have props, you don't have anything, so you have to fake it. And first of all, I don't know if Zach told you, but I ended up in forensics because I actually thought it was a science class.
Sounds like science to me. I mean, I would have been fooled too, I guess.
Yeah, but see, CSI wasn't around back then. All we had was Trapper John, M.D., and that's what I thought it was. I thought I was going to get to dissect some bodies or do some stuff like that. And that first day of school, my junior year, my first period class, I could not figure out why forensics was down in the fine arts building. And the entire walk down the hall, I had convinced myself that it was down there because that's probably where they let them keep the dead bodies. They weren't going to let them keep them in the regular part of the school. You had to keep them in the annex or whatever. But I was rationalizing in my head, and I walk in, and there's a stage in the room, and I think, this is not what I signed up for. And come to find out, forensics is also known as competitive speech and drama. And so, thus, Zach's guess of debate was actually pretty close, but I was just not a very good debater. But I got into a mime with one of my friends and one of our cheerleader and one of our spirit dancers, and we did a mime that was loosely based around me being in a park flirting with one of the girls and not understanding that we were flirting, and she kind of turned me. I wasn't turned on to her. And the other girl came coming through jogging, and I was obviously attracted to her. Okay. So I put all my efforts into being noticed by the girl jogger, and I left the other girl sitting on the bench. And obviously the girl jogger didn't have a hard time acting, and she just shooed me away and went off, and I went back and sat on the bench. I ended up, you know, getting with the girl that was sitting on the bench. And it's, you know, a love gone right story, and a, you know, don't judge people by how, you know, there was a lot of depth to this mime, but we obviously swooned the judges at Little Rock Park View. It was in November. I remember it like it was yesterday, November of 1985, and I still got the medal hanging proudly in my trophy case.
So, let me just take this moment to anyone listening in Greenwood. If you have footage of this,
please
send it to Ruskin and Zach immediately. If we have to get rent a film projector, we will do it so we can see this. I have to see this.
So there, I mean, it sounds like you remember this pretty well. We were talking beforehand. I mean, could you give us a little mime?
Sure. Oh, if I can get Shannon Shirley to make the drive up from Van Buren and Paige, or it used to be Gandell, it's now Spradlin. She lives in Little Rock. I guarantee you we could recreate it without any rehearsal.
Wow.
Guarantee you.
Would
all
you,
three of them.
Would you ever consider doing this after a ref runs up the floor, maybe, you know, doing a little mime behind
yeah,
him?
Yeah.
I had some pretty good skills. I'm not gonna try to sit here and be all humble about it. I could mime with the best of them in Greenwood.
What about
I was all conference.
All conference, all county, I mean, all of it.
Potentially Yeah. I mean, they didn't have McDonald's All-Americans back there for mine, but I'm pretty sure I've been considered.
So you got?
Yeah, no, I bet we can still recreate it. We also, you know, we ended up writing we kind of expanded it into a full reader. It was called a Reader's Theater, and I tell you who we can get. Y'all need to get my mime teacher. My mime coach lives in Northwest Arkansas.
Hold on, there's a mime teacher?
She was at Miss Styles. I hope she's listening. She comes to all of our games. Sits right up there and cheers for me, just like all my coaches did. That's my mime coach.
Your high school is a lot different than mine.
It was very progressive. Very progressive for the River Valley.
So we're talking with Mike Neighbors here on Ruskin & Zach. So you got a medal for this, right? Not a ring or anything. Yeah.
No, it wasn't to that level, but it's a pretty nice medal. It's got some weight to it.
Okay. And there's not candy on the inside. Like, this is an actual medal.
Yeah, this is real.
All right. No.
We had a presentation and everything. We had a banquet and a presentation, and we didn't hang any banners. That wasn't quite back yet. You go now to these venues and you see the banners for debate and chorus and everything else in the gym, but Greenwood didn't make the cut in Greenwood.
Well, why not? Why? I mean, you've got some swing now. I mean,
this has to happen.
I mean, can we please get the Greenwood administration to hang a 1985 MIME state championship banner? You'd show up for that.
I think it would probably bring some attention, some much-needed attention to the forensics department in Greenwood if they would.
There are minds out there suffering in silence right now.
That's right.
I want to do my part to make sure that the silence is just by choice, not you know, they are choosing to be Marcel Marceau-ish. But, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, hey, listen, I used to be not one to talk about it, but I'm okay with it now. I'm 51. I can live with it.
So now we have a quest now. We've got to get Greenwood, and we've got to get them to right or wrong here and get this banner in the at minimum at the trophy case. At the most, let's hang it in the Bulldog Arena. I mean, let's go all the way here. Why not? I mean, come on.
I don't know. It's been a long time coming. It's a long time overdue. We have patiently waited, and I'll do my part. I'll try to get Shannon and Paige behind the effort and see what we can't get done, because there's a lot of future mimers down there in the preschools that just need to have somebody to look up to, and I'd love to be that person for them.
I mean, you don't even have you've got to have a room or something named after you down there. You're their most famous alum.
I don't even think I'm in the top. I don't think I'm in the Hall of Fame.
Name one.
I got a long way to go.
Name one.
Name one
more famous than you.
Tyler Wilson?
No. Yeah.
I don't know. He's pretty big. We had a guy that played in the major leagues back in the day named Rick Coatney that he pitched. He struck out. He struck out about everybody, I think, after he told me all these stories on the golf course. I think he struck out every major league pitcher batter there was.
Hey, we have a text question here. Did you get a chance to repeat? Was this a dynasty, like a mime dynasty, or?
You know what's funny is we did not. We kind of had a deal that once you won the state championship, you moved on to a different event. And this is another whole story we could do a segment on someday. But I did extemporaneous speaking the next year, and extemporaneous speaking is where you draw three topics out mm-hmm. of a hat and then you do a speech on it.
We call that a radio show.
Yeah. Exactly. You have 5 minutes to prepare. Well, one of my friend who I actually was in the mime with, Shannon Shirley, I was always nervous doing extemporaneous speaking. So she drew three topics for me. And one of them was water quality. The other one was something I had no clue what it was. And the other one was euthanasia. And I said, I got it. I can do that.
Oh, no.
So I went and spent my 5 minutes thinking up what I was going to do on euthanasia, and I got up to do the speech in front of everybody, and I said, have you guys ever on Saturday morning been watching those commercials, and you see the commercials come on of the people in Ethiopia with the fruit flies, and they're starving from hunger? And, I mean, everybody in the room is looking around like, what in the hell is this guy talking about? Hey, because my topic was not youth in Asia,
right,
like I thought it was.
Right.
It was euthanasia, which was mercy killing. Right. It was a big deal back then because this is when Kevorkian was going.
Right.
I did 7 minutes on the plight for the youth in Asia long before Farm Aid ever came out, and everybody was Shannon Shirley literally dropped her head onto her desk where I heard it bang, and just I went off. I did a great speech on euthanasia. I finished last, so I went from state champion to dead last in extemporaneous speaking because I didn't know the difference between youth in Asia and euthanasia.
This is a real life Emily Nutella situation. Remember her, Gilda
yes.
Radner?
Oh yeah.
It's not, it's busing kids. Oh, never mind.
Never mind. That's exactly what I thought at the end of.
We're getting some text questions here. People have some questions about your mime ability. DC asks, are you allowed to cheer at a mime competition?
Oh, yeah. How's the crowd at this thing?
Only at the end. It is a library-ish setting, but at the end, if it's good, like ours was obviously the best in the state in 85. I'm pretty sure we beat a group from DeFalls Bluff. If I remember right, they were runner up. But yeah, there's mass applause for mimes at those events. You can imagine.
Juju wants to know, given the chance, would you have left for the draft?
Probably would have. Yeah, I don't think I could have improved my stock my senior year. Obviously, I'd have been.
We're getting a lot of suggestions. A text on the 505, which I think is Albuquerque. They want to put up a banner that says a mime is a terrible thing to waste.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah, it is, and it's a true statement. So I'd be happy to pose whenever they're ready.
So do you feel like if you're in a big city where they have street performers and there is a mime there, do you feel like more of a I'm going to stay and watch this for a little while, or do you just keep on walking?
Oh, no, I watch it. I judge them. If they're good, if they're better than me, I give them a tip. And if they're not, I just keep going.
Have you ever met one better than you?
Oh, many. Oh, yeah. I've been to New York. Oh, yeah. No, there's people that I was Greenwood good. I was River Valley, Arkansas good. I wasn't nationwide street performer good. Although I think I probably could. If I'd have really focused on that, there's no telling where it could have gone.
My neighbors is our guest here. We're getting a ton of feedback on this. We're getting some questions about whether or not you would be able to go to Vegas and survive.
I think I would. There's no question. I couldn't make it because I don't have a lot of needs. So I would live minimally. I wouldn't make much, but I wouldn't need much. But mimes are tough. I would be the guy in the bush out there if I went to. That guy gets me every time I go. Yeah. So I know where he's going to set.
Yeah,
gets me every time, and I know where he's going to be. I probably couldn't. I could have in my younger days, but I've got that wedding to still pay for.
This is it's a Vegas thing, but it's also a New York thing. Is I don't like the people dressed in the dirty character costumes. Like you've got Elmo smoking a cigarette and like Cookie Monster. I don't know about that. That's creepy.
Yeah, a little creepy. A little creepy.
That one. Mickey Mouse is like, hey, kids.
That doesn't take talent. That's just getting a costume, and that's not a talent. I'm going to pay talent. If they catch my attention, I put money in there. That's my rule. If I stop, they get money. If I stop and really watch, they get more. But that's kind of my rule at those places, and I try to pass that down to my kids.
Have you ever considered painting your face and, going full mime? I mean, doing the whole Marcel Marceau
the black and white striped shirt and the whole thing?
No. No, that's never. The only time I painted my face was when we showed up for a kiss as kids one time at a Halloween party that we thought was masquerade but wasn't. So that was another.
How'd you miss the memo on that one?
Hey, it was back in the day, and it started out masquerade, and nobody wanted to do it, and they changed it to just 70s theme, and everybody was there in tie dyes and sunglasses, and
you showed here, up as
here,
Kiss.
Here we show up as Gene Simmons and Peter Criss.
Now, which one were you?
I was Gene Simmons.
Of course.
Yeah. And it was one of those moments, again, where you look at each other and go, we either go all in and enjoy this or we go home. What do you want to do? We went all in.
So Scott wants to know if you have a replica medal hanging in the Greenwood trophy case.
No, but if somebody would donate $4.99, we can make sure there is.
Okay.
I can go to Party City. I'll get you
That's
one.
Right.
I think $4.99 would cover it.
Oh, wow. Well, this is just another one of those legendary conversations with Mike Neighbors here on Ruskin and Zach. Coach, hope everything's going well as the practice keeps going and everything. Yeah. And we'll talk again later, I guess.
Hey, now you said when we were texting last night that you did some other dumb stuff. So we'll get you on again and we'll talk about some more dumb stuff.
We can talk about going to six proms. We can do whatever you want to do.
I'm sorry, what? Six proms? With a minute left to go in the segment, you dropped six proms? Do you remember all their names?
Oh, yeah. I've got pictures.
That's not what I asked. I asked if you remembered their names.
I do. Okay. Yeah, it's easy. Four of them was one same person, so it's easy.
Scott wants to know if you're in the State Mime Hall of Fame.
Man, I hope so. I need to check that out. Write in candidate for that.
We'll get that in the Arkansas Activities Association Hall of Fame for next year. Next fall, we'll do that. Thank you, Coach.
Thanks, y'all.
Appreciate
you bet.
Mike Neighbors with us here on Ruskin and Zach. All right, Ruskin and Zach, Friday, and happy to be joined again by Chief Meteorologist 4029, Darby Bybee. 4029, get ready weather. Got to get the branding right in there. Darby's with us on the hotline. How you doing, Darby?
Doing good. How are you guys?
We're doing good. We appreciate it, as always, for you humoring us. Now, you've already purchased your stadium cutout. Is that correct?
Oh, yes. I saw that on Twitter yesterday, and I thought, wow, that would be awesome. And then I thought, you know, we can make this much more fun. And so that's what I did.
At any point during the let's make this more fun, the sleeveless Christmas sweater, did you think at all that might be a bad idea?
Oh, absolutely not. No. My hope is that at some point, during the season, you know, they use the cameras and they look at the cardboard cutouts. You've seen them do it in baseball and other sports. So my hope is that at some point they zoom in on my picture. And that Christmas vest, not going to make any sense in, you know, September, October. But come that game against Alabama on December 5th, it's going to make a lot more sense.
So timely. So be damned the other five home games. You're playing for one.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Okay. That's assuming it survives the elements of 2 months in that stadium with the wind and the rain and everything.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. I'm wondering if, and I didn't look much into it. Surely they're not actually cardboard. They must be some other material because there's no way they're going to survive, you know, for that long.
Yeah. And then you could look pretty rough in December.
Yeah, I mean, by the time December rolls around, who knows what it looks. But and then that brings up another question: are they going to just leave those cardboard cutouts in the stands? Because if they get a big turnout for this, and a lot of people contribute money, which it sounds like it's going to a good cause, which is good. But if a
foundation.
Lot of people, if a lot of people do this, I mean, that's do they literally take put them in and then take them out for every game, or just leave them in there for several months?
Yeah. What a thankless job having to go pick those up after each game.
Yeah. Are you just in the stadium, or did you get the front row?
Oh, I got the VIP there.
All right. Let's go.
I got the VIP. Are you guys going to get cardboard cut? You've got to do this.
We figure our images will be rejected.
We're trying to sneak a couple past the goalie. We were trying to get a John Wayne Gacy in there, possibly a Ty Story, and see what happens.
That would be. I do hope. And it turns out, actually, I was talking to some guy who tried to submit a picture of Chad Morris with in a clown face kind of thing. And apparently, there must be some sort of algorithm in there or something, because it immediately denied it.
Good to know.
The picture, and also somehow recognized that it was doctored. So it sounds like you can't actually do that. It has to be, and there are, I know that there are words, there's wording in there that says that you have to, it has to be a picture of you or someone you know you got permission from. So it has to be a more personalized picture. Mine got accepted immediately.
They're like, this guy's harmless other than the sweater. This guy's harmless.
Yeah, well, hopefully that's true.
Hey, we've got some Twitter questions from you. Are you up for this?
Sure.
Okay. This when we announced that you were going to be on the show today, a Jordan B sent in a question about who is the newsroom goat.
All right. So I'm a silly, gullible person. Here's what happened. A few weekends ago, Jordan, and you know Jordan. Right.
Yes.
She came into the studio and started basically talking about some new thing that the company wanted to do, where we would, the station was going to get a mascot, basically, or a pet. And I thought, oh, so like we're going to get a dog or something, or a cat? Is there going to be a cat, like, you know, roaming the office or something like that? I'm allergic to cats, so I was a little bit worried. But it turns out, this whole thing was total nonsense. But he convinced me that the newsroom was going to get a go. She actually, and she said, but she, you know, she put it in such a way that, oh, it's really for a news story, is really what it is. And so we're going to kind of raise the goat for a little bit. And, you know, and so it was kind of believable if you're a gullible moron like me. And I bought into it. And then Paige comes in the next day, and she kind of adds on to this. She doesn't mention the news story, and so it made me a little suspicious. Their stories were slightly different. But she actually wrote on the dry erase board in the newsroom what everyone's duties were going to be: cleaning out the pen, feeding the goat, all of these things. And my duty was to check the temperature. And my first thought was, where am I checking the temperature on this goat, number one? And then I thought, and then she said, then you have to send that to the Department of Health or something. And I'm like, oh, isn't it? Why would I? And so there were all these red flags, but they put a lot of effort into it. You know, they really went all out on it, and then everybody got in on it. And once they saw that I was buying into it, and they got me. I believed it for like 2 or 3 days, and then eventually one of our kind directors, Corbin, informed me that it was probably not true. And I said, are you sure? I'm not 100%, but I'm pretty sure this is nonsense. And,
wow.
I felt pretty dumb, but I also have a great deal of appreciation for that level of, of effort. They did put a lot of effort into it.
They committed to the bit.
They committed, exactly.
Now, were you the target or just collateral damage?
It started out as just like a joke I think Jordan was doing. Like, she didn't really even think, I don't think she even really thought it was, I don't think she ever thought I was going to believe it. And I didn't believe it at first. When she told me about it, I was like, all right, sure. But when Paige came in the next day and really was adamant about it, she finally convinced me, and she convinced me, I think, with that dry erase board, because it was in the, I went in the newsroom, there it was, you know, all these different, but none of the managers were aware. I told them about it, and, you know, they got a kick, we all got a kick out of it. It was a well-orchestrated prank, you know, and kudos to them. And I'm a gullible moron. You can probably convince me of about anything.
Will there, or has there been retribution for this?
There will be. I have some ideas. You know, nothing crazy. You know, just a little bit.
Darby. No. Until today, it was pretty much an inter-office joke. Now everybody knows.
No,
I can help you. I can help you.
People should know this about me. I mean, this is something that should be common knowledge. Otherwise,
we had an intern, Darby, when we started, that Zach has a lot of different sports tchotchkes in his office, and they were misplaced around the office. And then Zach took this guy's stuff and like put it. We're still finding it in ceiling tiles. Yeah. 14 months later, like he went like full escalation. It was Tet offensive on this thing.
I don't believe when you get got, I don't believe in measured responses. I believe in scorched earth.
I'm not that kind of guy. I mean, it was funny, and you know, I thoroughly enjoyed it. So I'm not gonna, I've got some ideas.
This is why you third party this, Darby. You have plausible deniability. You go, I don't know what happened. Zach just showed up and stuff started happening.
No, people need to know.
All right.
All right. So
you're a better man than either of us.
So the next time Darby's on the weather, just remember he's the guy with the pet goat.
Right. Yeah. No. We thought about getting chicken. So
you know, get fresh eggs. I mean, hey.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's absolutely right. Darby Bybee is our guest, 4029, chief meteorologist here on Ruskin and Zach. All right, can we get to weather now?
Yeah,
you want to get to weather? Because, sure. I mean, obviously it's the, like, unofficial last weekend of summer, and it looks like the weather's going to be pretty good.
You know, this weekend is going to be good. We were hoping for a little bit better drop in humidity, probably not going to have that. But, you know, it's going to be a good weekend to, you know, be on the lake, just finding ways to cool down because we'll have some warm afternoons, obviously a good dose of sunshine, you know, it's just kind of a cool night, not a bad camping weekend, probably not cool enough for me personally. I kind of need lows in the 40s and 50s. That's my kind of camping weather, but we'll have lows in the 60s. It'll be good. There is a chance for a spotty shower or storm today, but once we get into Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, it'll be mostly dry and warm in the afternoon. Pretty good.
We ran a poll question a couple weeks ago that for the rest of 2020, every hurricane should be named Karen. Who's naming these things? Because these hurricanes need to have more fearsome names.
Yeah, well, so they come out with the names, I don't know, years in advance.
Right.
And you know, they're giving them names, you know, kind of English names, Hispanic names, both, because then there's different genders, male, female, because they affect obviously much more than just the United States. And so some of these names are tough to pronounce, but the good news is they released a pronunciation list, and so they actually tell you how to pronounce all the names. And some of them are definitely not very fearsome, obviously. And some of them don't sound like... Arthur, for example, who's going to be that? Arthur, really? Come on.
Sounds like someone wearing a cardigan, you know, smoking a pipe, right, reading a book. You know,
I mean, we've had right. We've had a sandstorm, murder hornets, a pandemic, hurricanes. Please tell me the weather's just going to calm down and be nice through the end of December. I can't handle any more of this.
You know, some of these things aren't really that unusual. The dust, you know, that was a really big dust storm that happens all the time, just not to that level. The murder hornet, I got nothing for that.
That's out of your that's out of your level of expertise.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I know that's out of my level of expertise, and that is kind of crazy actually. But you know, as far as the, you know, it's going to be a strong hurricane season. But you know, it hopefully it doesn't break any records. The the record I think was 2005 or something. There were, you know, 28 I think. Named storms. So hopefully we don't get to that level. But yeah, it's been a crazy year.
Yeah, it's been weird. Yeah, it's been a little off this year.
Yeah, a little off. Whatever.
Will they retire Laura because it was so strong and they won't use that name again?
Right, yeah. So for really strong hurricanes, they often do retire those storms. I don't know if Laura is going to get retired. I think it probably will. You know, storms like Andrew, Katrina,
right.
You know, those kinds of storms, they've gotten retired. They get retired because you don't want to be, obviously, when that storm comes around later on, especially when you look back in history, like, which Laura are we talking about? Which Katrina are we talking about? So that's part of the reason. And then also just out of respect for
the people that lost their lives, homes, and everything.
So I'm looking at the list right now. There's they've got it through 2025. There's no Derek's. And it doesn't go to Z, so there'll never be a Hurricane Zach.
I feel that that is somehow letter bias.
No. There's also no Darbys, at least through 2025.
Yeah, there have been Darbys in the past, though.
Do you take special interest in the Darby storms?
Well, see, here's the thing. You know, the lower down you are in the alphabet, the less likely that storm is really going to be intense. The early storms are usually not the most intense. Now, if it ends up being a late start to the season, those early storms can, of course, or those first names can, of course, be much more intense. But you don't. It's like Andrew, for example. That's an outlier. You know, that's a real outlier. The first storm ended up being so incredibly intense. Usually the ones that get, you know, the worst and then get retired are further up in the alphabet.
So, have there been, like, repeat storms? Like, you know, Amy, we're going to give her another shot, a second date with Amy if, you know, she came through as a Category 1?
They've definitely recycled names. I think they're trying to get away from that. In recent years, they've definitely branched out, including a wider variety of names from other countries and that kind of thing, which is why, you know, especially in the last several years, they've had to release pronunciations, because they're not necessarily common names we would hear all the time. But they do recycle names. They definitely do. Yeah, I think never mind.
Can I circle back to the goat thing for a second? What were Jordan and Paige's assigned duties?
Paige was supposed to check the temperature with me. Jordan was supposed to, I don't know what, I never saw her.
Was she like in charge of hugs and kisses? Because that would be a dead giveaway.
Someone was charged with cleaning out the pen. And I thought, there's no way. And when I saw that, that was a really big red flag.
Hey, man, red flags start looking like Six Flags.
I know, right, yeah. But that would not be like Six Flags. That would be terrible.
I had a text in question on that.
By the way, I scrolled down on this page here, and there will be a Darby in the Pacific in 2022.
There you go.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you're on the list. So
2022.
That's right.
Does that feel like a road trip for you?
What's that?
Does that feel like a road trip for you?
Well, that'd be an airplane trip.
Well,
because that most of those are going to hit somewhere. Although some of those storms do hit Mexico, like so the west coast of Mexico get affected by those storms all the time. So yeah, I guess it could be, but. I don't really have a lot of interest in driving down and covering a hurricane. A lot can go wrong really quickly. It's not like with tornadoes. I used to chase all the time. But tornadoes, if you're a good chaser, you can avoid the. Now, not in every situation. There are situations in which, you know, things can go wrong pretty quickly. But generally speaking, when you're storm chasing, you can avoid the worst part of the storm and just see the beauty of it and report what you're seeing and help people out. Within a hurricane, you can't do that. If you're not in a spot that is going to survive that storm, you know, a sturdy structure, a well-built structure, your life is very much in danger.
So you're not interested in standing there with the bulletproof vest and the helmet on and the goggles as it rolls in?
I mean, part of me is. But now I've got a family. My wife would probably take issue with that.
Can we get a Rolling Thunder update? Because we had Jordan in here last week, and she asked about where Rolling Thunder was.
Oh, I've actually installed a pulley system in my shed, so now I can do my workouts there.
A pulley system. Pulling system in your shed. Is this
a pulley? So I in my shed. I kind of reinforced this one spot near the roof and then installed a chain and then put a pulley, attached the pulley to the chain, and a cable goes through the pulley, and I'm able to use that pulley system to get in some of the workouts I wasn't able to get in otherwise without going to the gym.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. Impressive.
I want to put one of those in like my living room. Why in the shed? I would put it right smack dab in the living room as a showpiece.
Which, you know, look, it's not, I still want to get to the gym whenever possible, but, you know, in the COVID era, you know, I try to limit that a little bit as much as I can, but I still try to get to the gym because, you know, I want to support the gyms and, you know, that kind of thing. But now I can do it from home, and I bought a new piece of equipment that really works finger strength and wrist strength a little bit better. So I feel like I'm a little bit better equipped in my training now, which is good.
Okay. Sounds very exciting. We're talking with Darby Bybee from 4029 here on Ruskin and Zach. Yes?
I can hear the blank there.
Well, no, we were in. Look, Jordan did a story on Stratomatic baseball. She can certainly follow you around for a weekend. I'm going to make this happen.
What is that? What's Stratomatic baseball?
It's a baseball game with dice.
And
it's like
cards.
Dungeons and Dragons for baseball nerds.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it.
Well, that actually sounds pretty cool. We used to play a lot of Dungeons and Dragons.
Darby, we need to get you out more if you think that sounds really cool. You need to come out with me on a Friday night. I'll show you what cool is.
Right. You know, it's funny. My friends make fun of me all the time because I know very little about what everybody else knows about. I kind of grew up kind of isolated out in the country. We just didn't really do much. And, you know, I would go to school, go to practice, come home every day. I was never, especially popular culture, I didn't really, I was never very, but anyway, my friends make fun of me specifically for that reason.
You're in good company here. I mean, we know nothing.
Right.
We make fun of ourselves every single day.
Yeah, no, I've noticed. Yeah,
you fit right in.
Terribly.
Have you ever tried mime? Just out of curiosity.
No, I've heard Coach Neighbors. Apparently, into that.
Would you ever consider doing the weather in mime?
Something tells me that would be particularly useful to our viewers. Although, you know, a lot of it is, you know, is visual. It really is. Most of it's visual. So I don't think that's good.
Just don't mime any of the radio weather reports that you send us.
Now, sometimes I wish you guys were mine. Sure, a lot of people do.
Yeah, most of the audience does. Usually, when wish that we weren't talking.
Yeah, right about now.
All right, Darby Bybee, 4029 Chief Meteorologist. So again, weekend looks good. A little warm, maybe, but not you know 95 and heat indexes like or indices. Pardon me, of like 105 or anything like that, though.
You think proper grammar. I like
that. Thank you. I try.
There you go. No, not like that. Now, in the River Valley in central Arkansas, it will be a little bit warmer there, and even a little bit more humidity is often the case, but not 95 with 105, you know, heat index or anything like that, that you're right. But it will be warm. We're watching a cold front next week, which is interesting. Right now, there's not a lot of confidence in exactly how much cool air comes behind it when exactly it arrives, but it should eventually bring in some form of cooler air, particularly to northwest Arkansas, as we get into next week. So that's something to look forward to.
That's great. Cause
when you're ready to burn that newsroom to the ground, let me know. I can help you.
No. I've got some things that, you know, again, it's not going to be, I'm not going to go crazy with it, but I've got some ideas.
All right.
About
some schemes. Got some schemes going here.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, Darby, thank you as always for spending
about
time with
this.
Us.
Sorry about ruining your career.
That's
again.
Right. Yeah, we were sorry. Thank you, though.
Yeah. No.
The enthusiasm.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Life goes on for somebody.
Yes. Yes.
For you guys.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to face the music on this.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's okay. I mean, there's always a tutor in mime.
That's true. Darby Bybee, 4029. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. You guys have a good Labor Day weekend. Everybody All right. have a good weekend. Be safe.
Yes, absolutely. We'll be back with more Ruskin and Zach coming up.